Hi, friends. Welcome to the By Faith podcast. I'm your host, Christine Hoover, and I'm so glad you're here. Each week this season, I'm talking with a guest about a specific experience in their life, letting us step into their shoes so we can learn better how to love our brothers, sisters, family members, and neighbors. This episode of the podcast is sponsored by The Good Book Company, publisher of A Better Than Anything Christmas by Barbara Rioch. These daily family devotions for Advent give a thorough investigation of why Jesus came and how what he gives us is better than anything else we could wish for. Each day, there's a passage to read together, questions to think about, an explanation, and a prayer. There are also age-appropriate application questions, some for younger children and some for older children, as well as journaling space so that each family member can write or draw their own response to what God has shown them. Pick up a copy of A Better Than Anything Christmas at thegoodbook.com or wherever good books are sold. Today, my guest on By Faith is Vivian Mabuni. I absolutely loved getting to know Vivian when we recorded this interview. Vivian is a Bible teacher and author who takes great joy in encouraging, supporting, and uplifting Asian American women like her in the global church. She hosts a great podcast called Someday Is Here, where she highlights some of these amazing Asian American women who are serving the Lord in their various contexts. I chatted with Vivian about the Asian American experience and specifically the Christian Asian American experience in the U.S. I found it fascinating to consider, from her perspective, how growing up in both an Eastern and Western culture has given her a unique vantage point on the Bible, which, as you may know, is written for an Eastern audience. This episode will encourage you and give you such great perspective, I guarantee. So here, friends, is my chat with Vivian Mabuni. Thank you so much, Vivian, for joining me on By Faith.
Thanks for having me, Christine. I'm excited about our conversation.
Well, I am too. And before we jump in, I just would love for you to introduce yourself to my listeners.
Yes. Well, my name is Vivian Mabuni, and I live here in Southern California in Mission Viejo, which is between LA and San Diego, and have lived here, in Southern California about 30 years. Almost 30 years.
Wow.
So in California for 31. So I grew up in Colorado and I am the first Christian in my family. I grew up culturally Buddhist and my husband is the first Christian in his family. And fast forward, we've been married 29 years now and his entire family now knows the Lord, which is really amazing. So I've been on staff with Crew for 31 years and I have served 28 of those years with college students, and then within the last 3 or 4 years have switched full-time to speaking and writing, and I'm also a podcast host, and yes. I love teaching the Bible.
It's so funny that you said that you work for Crew, because this is not something I planned, but almost every guest this season has worked for Crew.
Seriously? Wow.
Yes. That's great. It just keeps amazing me, and people all over the country in the U.S., and doing different types of ministry within Crew. So Go Crew. That's amazing.
Yeah. It's amazing. I think as I speak at different women's events across the country, inevitably I will meet people and these grandmas that will come up to me and say, "Oh, I became a Christian on my college campus through the ministry of Crew." And I just think, yes, that's why we exist.
So. Yeah. Did you become a Christian in college?
No, I became a Christian in high school, but My college years were really significant in helping really ground me in my faith, helping me to learn to not only live by faith, but also multiply my faith through discipleship and share my faith through evangelism. So I just felt like my experience with Crew, it really helped ground me.
Yes, for sure. Well, you mentioned your podcast and it's called Someday Is Here, which I want to know. We want to know about the podcast, but also why you named it that.
Oh, I love the story, Christine. So if you're familiar with the IF Gathering, my first IF Gathering was in 2015, and I was on a racial reconciliation roundtable conversation with Latasha Morrison and a number of other people. Jamie Ivey was on that. And at the end of that conference, the action point that year was writing a dream that God was putting on your heart on the back of a domino. And the picture was that our dominoes would fall into each other and that picture of discipleship and going out and changing the world. So I'd scribbled my little dream on my domino, and Jenny said, I'd love for you to share your domino on the live stream at the end of the conference. And I was like, I don't want to share my domino. And then as I was walking backstage down the stairs, I felt the Holy Spirit really prompt me and said, Viv, share the domino. So I went out, and I have my domino right here. Unfortunately, your viewers can't see it, but I'm holding it right now. But I pretty much just choked out the words, like, all y'all are great, but none of you look like me. Mm. And so my vision is to help raise up the next generation of Asian American Christian women leaders. And so I shared this tearfully, and I can't tell you, it was a moment. And then the domino went on my dresser, and I kind of forgot about it. And then in 2019, at the New Year's Eve of 2018, our family, for the first time, my three kids were in different places. My husband was with his family. I had spent time with my parents. So we were all separated for New Year's Eve for the first time in all of our lives. And so I had left my parents' house, was driving into Southern California on a Sunday morning to get ready to bring in the New Year with one of my best friends. And I knew my book was coming out in 2019, and I was just crazy. I had my Spotify worship list, hands are raised. I'm all by myself driving my car, and out of nowhere, I'm in the fast lane, out of nowhere, this huge souped-up RV pulls up in front of me and drives in front of me. And I'm looking, and there's the carpool lane, and there are these open lanes, and I'm like, what? I'm having my moment. I didn't understand. Then I looked up, and the back of the RV literally was a Christian fish symbol, uh-huh. and then the three words, someday is now. And I just looked up in the sky and was like, really, Lord? What does this even mean? So I wrote down, someday is now, in my bullet journal. It ended up becoming this gathering of Asian American women, because I'd been talking about this all this time. Yeah. It became the name of my podcast until we found out that there was a trademark violation. So
oh, no.
We had a cease and desist letter. So we changed it to Some Days Here, which is actually better because the initials don't spell sin.
You don't think about that stuff.
Right? Yeah, you know, those kinds of things. So we actually love, because here is a place word. And now is a time word, but here is more of like, we are here. So that has begun this beautiful sisterhood of Asian American women. And the podcast really is designed in such a way that I'm interviewing amazing Asian American women. Mm-hmm. But my hope is that non-Asians would also listen to learn about Asian American history, to learn about Asian American culture, in a podcast form through conversation. And I've just heard some great feedback from moms who've adopted Asian kids, friends who have just never had any experience with Asian American anything, learning and taking things in. So it's just been such a joy, Christine. I've just loved this part of this season of trying podcasting and all of
that. Yes, so. It's so fun to get to have conversations with such a variety of women and then get to share it with other people. So I'm glad you're doing that. Are you hoping to, you said you wanted to raise up Asian American Christian women and disciple them. Is that kind of the main goal of the podcast? Or are you, what are you hoping to do with it?
Yes. So the podcast itself was, I intentionally had it not be a Christian podcast. My desire was really that it would have a larger listenership, okay. that more people would listen to it. But I kind of briefed all the guests, you know, don't hold back on your faith, but just make sure you're using language that a non-believer would understand. So my hope is like several fold. One is just educating and validating the experience of Asian Americans. But the other part was really demonstrating how Christians are so weird these days and just being able to have, you know, real conversations with, you know, relevant, authentic people who have a true, genuine walk with God, I think is really attractive,
yes.
and appealing, because Jesus is so wonderful. And Christians are weird. We are so weird and so divisive out there. And so that was really the heart of the podcast itself, was just one piece of a movement of really helping to raise up these women. So now I have these monthly Zoom groups. We just had one last night, and it's really a time to equip, to encourage, to kind of help guide these women in all of these seasons. So it's such a fun blend of different generations, different theological backgrounds and political backgrounds and experiences, mm-hmm. but there's such a common thread of our faith and our love for the Lord. And so it's just been so rich and so wonderful. I could talk about it all day long.
Yeah, I love it. Well, you say on your website that you really want to be able to validate the Asian American women and their experience of living in both the Eastern and Western worlds. Mm-hmm. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yes. So if there are, so these are generalizations, but generally speaking, Eastern values and really most of the Bible, the writers of the Bible time, the culture of, especially Hebrew culture, but the culture of the Old and New Testament is a lot more Eastern in that it's very collective. That's why you read about people who came to faith in Christ and the entire family would also come to faith in Christ. Mm. It was very much connected. It was not about the individual. It was about the collective. There's a high view of honoring those who are older. There's a sense that you are more than just yourself. Mm-hmm. So what you do reflects on others. Those are kind of Eastern values. Western values, on the other hand, is more individualistic, self-actualization. What are your passions? What are your dreams? So there's a kind of be all that you can be is that sense of the Eastern and Western. So if you take an Asian American, it's this blend of both. So it's a neck, nectarine, which is like a combination of a peach and a plum, and they're crossed to a nectarine. So the nectarine is a unique fruit that's neither peach nor plum, but draws traits from both. So an Asian American, born and raised here in the United States, blue passport, but still, people keep saying, gosh, your English is really good, you know, like assuming that I am from an Asian country instead of the United States of America. So I don't feel like I fit in here, but if you put me in the middle of Shanghai, I don't fit in there either. I'm thinking in English, I dream in English, you know, it's just so, but my values, I can understand what's going on in some of the cultural nuances in both. So I'm proud to be an American, and I also have a huge value for a lot of these Asian values that are just in my DNA. So that's kind of that picture of Eastern and Western. And living in both worlds creates a lot of tension. Mm-hmm. And I think living as an Asian American Christian woman adds so many complexities because those are competing values. And I think that's where the beauty of having a space like Someday Is Here really helps to validate that experience and actually speak into the tensions and hopefully help navigate those.
Well, also I would imagine that gives you a very unique perspective on Christianity, on the church in America. I'd love to know your perspectives on that from where you stand with mm-hmm. your background. What do you see?
Oh, you know, I think the Asian Americans, I really believe we are part of the solution in terms of a lot of the tensions that we are currently experiencing, because on one hand, we have a little bit more, how do I explain this? I think sometimes it's a little bit easier to hear of some of the injustice coming from an Asian American versus someone who's Black. So there's just some tensions that I think land better, but I think I could speak to a Black audience in a way that would land better than you as a white woman. So it's kind of that in-between world that Asians sometimes get lost in. And we kind of were talking about this before we started recording the podcast, but a lot of times the conversation about racial injustice is really Black and white.
Yeah.
And Asians are a part of that too. They're, you know, the Japanese internment camp happened you know, in World War II and the Chinese Exclusion Act. There were people that fought, Chinese people fought in the Civil War, and we never learn about these things in our U.S. history. We just assume that, you know, Chinese are other. And, you know, when someone asks me, where are you from? And I say, Southern California, no, where are you really from? And I'm like, well, I grew up in Colorado, and but it's the sense of like, who are you? And that would never be asked of you. Like if you just said, I'm from Nashville, then it's the end of the question. Oh, that's cool. Did you grow up here? No, I grew up in somewhere else. You know, so that's the kind of microaggression that takes place that Asians experience. And with COVID, the term Chinese virus has actually been very damaging to my community. So there have been so many anti-Asian hate crimes. The recorded number is off the charts. My friends who are getting their cars, their tires slit, cars keyed, hateful notes, go back to your country, being racial slurs. I mean, all sorts of things are happening. And this, again, othering, where it's like, this is my country as much as it's your country. Like, you know, I have friends whose great-great-grandparents built the railroads. I mean, been here in the 1800s. So we still see this country as not the true makeup of everyone.
Uh-huh. We were talking about how it seems, in my perspective too, is that the Asian experience is muted. When we talk about race, it's usually black and white. And so I'm wondering what you would say into that conversation of what you're seeing right now. You know, you said in some ways you think that the Asian American citizens in our country might have something really powerful to say. What would you say into that?
There'd be a few things I would say. One is that all of us are responsible to knowing our own heritage and being able to identify. So, you know, if your listeners are Caucasian, it's a blend. You're Irish and Italian and Polish, but Irish is not the same as Italian, is not the same as Polish. And those cultural qualities are infused into the experience. Mm-hmm. My friend who's German, they make sauerkraut. I mean, they eat, it's part of the heritage. You know, there's certain holidays. And so it takes time for us to know our own heritage and embrace that. So for the Asians, so much of our experience has been to just try to fit in, even though we don't fit in. And so it's just kind of put your head down and work really hard. And I think this next generation up and coming, instead of the immigrant experience, they've had a generation who's immigrated to the country, become established, and now this next generation is like, now I see the inequality, the injustice. How is it that in publishing, it's a white publishing world? How is it that in Hollywood, you know, Oscar's so white? How is it that there is not representation in politics, in business, in all of these spheres? And then they're like, we need to be about making some noise and calling it out and saying that. So when I sit in a speaker room and I have conversations with other speakers, I'll mention something like, you know, in the history of Women of Faith Conference, there's never been an Asian American woman who's ever spoken main stage. And for most of my white sisters who hear that, they just never noticed. And then when they start to think about it, they think, huh. Come to think, I've never seen an Asian American woman speaking main stage. So those kinds of things matter greatly. So there's also a cultural piece as an Asian American is you don't promote yourself. That's just in the DNA. So that makes it really challenging to say, I could do that. Where a lot of my white friends are like, I could do that. And so they do. And so the Asian will tend to like pull back a little bit more, even though they have good ideas. So there's a double challenge. One is calling Asian American women to step out and step in and lead out and speak up and all of that. It's also part of it is for my white friends who are in places where they have an opportunity to notice for the first time, hey, this lineup does not represent all. How do we expand the table and bring in these voices? Because life is so much richer when we have the additional experiences and voices of others. So in the same way that if it's only married people with kids and we don't have singles, we are missing out. You know, women who are divorced also have a story and they don't have an opportunity to share from their experience, we miss out. Mm-hmm. And our study of the scriptures ends up being limited as well. So in the same way with any woman who struggles with infertility, how they would study a person like Elizabeth or Hannah, they're just going to pull out what we need to hear and in order to really engage even more so on a heart level. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And I think this is going to seem like a dumb question, but I just want you to be able to answer. I think we already know the answer, but why is it important for the audience to sit under and to hear from an Asian American teacher?
Mm-hmm. Great question. It's like, I'll answer it this way. So I have two sons and a daughter. And so I knew doing boys, like being a mom of boys, I understood Legos and Nerf guns and all of that. And so when Julia came along, there was a sense of like, I don't know, this is different. And the aisles that I go down Target are different and everything is different. And how do I do girls? I have to say, though, that the addition of Julia has enriched our lives. We could never go back to not having Julia. And she is different. And it's beautiful. And it's wonderful. And our family is more, is just fuller because she is there. And so why is it important to hear from Asian American women? I think once you've tasted that and been taught by and through other leaders of color, really, again, it's like my opening of the scriptures and me bringing in my experiences is only going to help enhance. Yes. So one example really quickly is our education system is Greek typically. So it's a very linear type of teaching, A plus B equals C, Socratic, or, you know, just it's very linear.
Yeah.
The Old Testament is circular. Hebrew is circular in its thinking. So one simple example is a lot of times when I'm discipling a new believer, the line of thinking goes like this with prayer. Like God, it says in the scriptures, God knows the words on my mouth even before I speak them. He knows my thoughts from afar. What can you tell an all-knowing God? Like, why pray? Like, what can you tell an all-knowing God? Nothing. Like, really, what is the point of prayer? Because he already knows everything. And that's a Western way of looking at it. An Eastern person takes that same question. God knows what's on my heart, the words I'm going to speak even before I say them. What can you tell an all-knowing God? Anything. And so prayer is this freedom because you can tell God anything. He already knows what's on your heart. He already knows. So it's like an example of a blending of an Eastern value and mm-hmm. Eastern way of seeing things that helps my Western brothers and sisters appreciate the scriptures in a different way. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes. And I think that this kind of stuff, I asked that question. I hope it didn't come across as disrespectful because I want us to think about that. This is not just about, oh, we need to have a variety of people on the stage. This is you and your culture and your experience is so different than mine in some ways that mm-hmm. you can help me and anyone else that you're teaching understand things that we would never see otherwise because we are coming from our own experience. And that makes my heart just want to sing. It's like, that's God. God designed that. He designed us mm-hmm. differently with different cultures so that he could be seen in his fullness and from all those yes. angles, right?
Yes. And I think sometimes we picture heaven to be like a Hillsong concert. and the truth is, true. Jesus never spoke a word of English. Like, you know, I mean, a lot of us in North America, because we have this North American exceptionalism and all of that, but I think we're going to be really surprised in heaven when we are surrounded by every tongue, tribe, and nation, but we're not singing in English.
Yes. Like,
necessarily, you know, and there are more believers of other ethnicities, and he's worldwide. The church, capital C, is so much more than what we've experienced here in the US.
Yes. So it's so funny because one of my sons last night at dinner said, do you think that we will all speak the same language in heaven? How are we going to understand each other? So we had this whole conversation about that. That's funny. So you say that you want to also help women celebrate, Asian American women celebrate their heritage. And I would imagine you'd say that to anyone, no matter what their background is. But why is that so important? And we want to know about your heritage too. What? Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, my ethnic background is Chinese. So both my parents were born in China, and their story is the Japanese invaded China. And so they fled to Taiwan and they had to rebuild their lives. And then they went to school at the university in Taiwan and ended up getting their master's degrees in Hawaii. And that's where they met and got married. And then they had me working on their PhDs in Wisconsin. So that's kind of, and my dad's first teaching job was in Colorado, which is where I grew up. So that's kind of my ethnic background. The reason why it's so important, you kind of touched on this already, Christine, but it's like when we have exposure and awareness, it fills in the beauty of who God is. Mm-hmm. So, gosh, when we hear other languages and understand other cultures, we just get a greater picture and our blinders are expanded. Probably the best thing, advice as I did college ministry, was to encourage college students to spend some portion of time internationally, not as a tourist, not as someone who is in the air-conditioned bus, visiting, you know, the plant or whatever, and just touring, but actually taking public transportation and buying food at the grocery store and getting to know the person that sells the popsicles on the corner and living in a place long enough to actually become a part of that community. And that experience, recognizing that God is not an American, is life-changing and so good and healthy for us. I think as Christians, we tend to just think that it's the way that we think. And until we're exposed to more, we just assume that this is the right way. Yeah. And this is the only way to fix a certain type of meal or eat. Just everything.
Everything.
Everything. So it's wonderful. I just think it just gives us a fuller picture. So in the same way that my brothers miss out when they don't hear the perspective of a woman. And when women have the opportunity to speak into any situation, they will bring in a perspective that the men don't have. Mm-hmm. We need that. And in the mm-hmm. same way, we need different socioeconomic, we need to just expand. And the more we expand, it gives context so that we don't start to other others. Yeah. I think a lot of times right now, when we are talking through really sticky challenges with the racial tension, if we don't have friends who are in the trenches dealing with the same issues, when I see an African-American man shot unarmed, I have a whole group of Black friends that I am lamenting with. It's no longer out there. Mm-hmm. There's a direct correlation. I have, I remember after this last Ahmaud Arbery with that whole George Floyd, everything. One of our dear friends did a hashtag of his name. He's Black. And then the hashtags of his three sons. Mm-hmm. And it was like, what would that be? I just burst into tears, Christine, because it's like, I stopped realizing that these are real people. People's sons and husbands mm. and uncles. And it just brings about connection and humanness, which is really the kingdom of God, yes. which is really what it looks like when God says for us to love him with all our heart, soul, strength, and mind, to love our neighbors as ourselves. That's what's living it out when we respond in compassion because we are connecting and we're relating.
Yeah, that's so good. Wow, I can't even imagine seeing my children's names as a hashtag. That's powerful. So when we talk about humanity and we're this theme that I'm doing for this season of the podcast is we're trying to step into the shoes of people to understand what their lives are like and so we can better love people around us. So I'd love to for us to be able to step into your shoes and just to know what are one or two things that you would you would wish that other people could understand about specifically the Asian American experience?
Mm-hmm. I love your question because it communicates that you have a posture of learning and wanting to know. And as a person of color, that just means a lot because there's a valuing that comes with that. So my first thing is always ask the questions, you know, and there are no dumb questions, and that actually communicates honor to me to want to know and understand. And it's not in a condescending kind of way. It's a real curious, like, help me understand your world. And so I love that and what you have just modeled. One or two things. One is communication styles, and this is generalizations, but a generalization of Asian Americans is because of this value of the collective and the hierarchy of honoring people who are older. If you have a Bible study, for example, and you have an Asian American person in that study or a boardroom, chances are, unless they grew up in a totally white environment, they will not speak up. Even if they did, they may not speak up unless invited to speak. And typically what is happening, so this is the one thing to realize, is that Asians are looking for a break in the conversation. It's almost like merging onto a freeway. They're waiting for a break in the cars to kind of get into the conversation. A lot of cultures speak on top of one another. Mm-hmm. And so there's no break. So by the time the Asian finally gets the break, the conversation's already three items past, whatever that was. Mm-hmm. And then the Asian is left with this stereotype of being really quiet and passive, when actually it was an honoring kind of thing. Like, I'm going to wait to honor you, so I'm not going to interrupt you. I'm going to wait for the appropriate pause. Now, Asian American is very broad, and there are lots of renditions especially now with mixed race and all that. But generally there are longer pauses for Japanese versus maybe a shorter pause for Chinese. So if you picture a Chinese restaurant or dim sum, it's pretty wild and the chopsticks are flying. It's very loud. If you go into a Japanese restaurant, it's very orderly and quiet, and the food is presented in, so there's a longer pause for Japanese. And so just knowing that, yeah, I think can really make a big difference. So as you lead, a couple really practical things is, you know, if you notice that I didn't say anything during the Bible study or during the meeting, the staff meeting, you could just say, hey, Viv, you know, wondering if you have any thoughts, and making a, you know, stopping the flow to bring in the voice of someone. If you are a part of the group and not the leader even, you can also do a little quick timeout. So just awareness, I think that would be one thing. The second thing I would want people to know is I love to share about my ethnic heritage, but it's hurtful when things are assumed of me that my English is really good, or just because of how I look, all of these decisions are made about me. So it is actually hurtful sometimes to say, where are you really from? Mm. I don't think sometimes it's meant from a place of wanting to, you know, make a connection, uh-huh, but I think it's flipping it again. Like, again, I wouldn't ask you, where are you really from? And right. So it's like, where is that question really coming from? And recognizing that that's a very othering posture. And so, again, it's like shifting our minds to understand that American is not white. Mm-hmm. American is a whole plethora. And white isn't just white. It's actually made up of English and French and, mm-hmm, Swedish and, you know, all of these different ethnic cultures. And so my encouragement to my white friends is always find out who you are. So my Dutch friend, she has qualities that are actually really similar to Chinese. We joke about it all the time. The Chinese and the Dutch are so similar. We have these, you know, we have these similarities. And I have another really dear friend who's Portuguese, and the food, the culture, the celebrations that are true of her heritage. That's what I would encourage my white friends to be doing the study for themselves as well, so they understand where they're really from in, yeah, that regard. Does that make, yeah, sense?
That's, yes, that is interesting to think about, and something that I don't think, as speaking from a white perspective that we think about very much.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be interesting, I think, for anyone to do that. It's been interesting for me to learn more about where I came from, my family came from, and realize, oh, I can see that in my family culture.
Mm-hmm.
So what about being a Christian Asian American?
Mm-hmm.
And what do we need to understand about that?
I would say, again, broad, super broad. So there are very robust churches that are Korean or Japanese or Asian here in Southern California. You know, some really large churches that are predominantly a certain group, like from the founding families from long, long ago. I think what would be helpful to understand is the immigrant church experience is really different than the mainline church experience. So when you have a second generation Asian American, a lot of times the church, if it's led by an immigrant pastor, if the eldership of the leadership of the church is all immigrants, the messages don't necessarily land in a way that helps the second generation, third generation congregants. So a lot of Asian Christians, when they grow up in the church, kind of get lost after a while because the messages don't seem to, they don't seem to feel as relevant because the place that they're coming from is so different.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I think it's important to realize there are generations and the immigrant experience plays a huge role in any Asian American. So probably the biggest thing is to not assume that every Asian Christian is the same.
Mm-hmm.
And where they come from is the same. There's a huge portion of, if you've ever watched Kim's Convenience,
yes.
It's on Netflix, right?
Yes.
So their little picture into the Korean church, it's like this, it's hilarious, but it's so accurate because the comparison and, you know, the place and trying to posture. But a lot of immigrants come to the church primarily for business connections, social connections, and thankfully many of them meet the Lord, but their first lead foot is really they're wanting to at least find a place where they feel understood and they can speak if they're, you know, if they're from a certain Asian country, they can speak in that language and be understood. So there's how do I apply for a driver's license? Those really practical things. So that has been the role that the immigrant church has played. But as we continue to move forward with each subsequent generation, the needs are very different. Mm. So that's where I think, honestly, as more and more, I think we do have a really unique time to minister to a wider range if we have the mindset coming into it. So in a women's event, if we can include a more diverse group of people in the leadership as well as who's presenting, it really will reach more people.
Mm-hmm.
So I can share my experience as an Asian American Christian woman, and 100% of the time, I have any woman of color comes up to me and says, I get what you're saying. That's your story is my story. There's so many similarities.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just a desire to have someone just speak something of connection.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, when it's like, okay, we're in the sea of vanilla.
So. Uh-huh. Well, that's my next question is, so we're talking about this next generation, how the immigrant-led church may not be where they can really connect and relate to the Lord and one another. But then let's say, okay, they go into a majority white church. How might they get lost? What are things that we as white people might not see or understand that we are either overlooking or it's just not on our radar? What are we not seeing?
Yes. I think, to start with, I think one of the things we don't see when we have large or even some groups of Asians in a congregation is that the value of family is so huge. And so the loyalty is so high because it's collective. So the place of church is so important. So the sooner we can plug in families into small groups, connecting relationally, that is going to be, I mean, I think that's true of everybody, but especially for communities of color who are coming from a culture of collective. So did you ever see My Big Fat Greek Wedding?
Yes.
That scene when the husband, the boyfriend meets the Armenian family, that just picturing that, that's kind of the sense of family. Like you just, all the cousins and everybody, you know, so that's where it's like, it's so important if you have someone who's new to the church, who's checking it out, it means so much to be invited over for, you know, some banana bread and coffee or a meal or any kind of gesture of fellowship, breaking of bread. That means so much. It's not just a meal. It really is a deeper connection. So mm-hmm. I'd start that at that point.
That's so helpful. I love that this is such a practical, everything you're giving us, good examples of how we can act on this. So I guess that would be my closing question is for us who are listening and maybe we've just never even considered what is the Asian American experience. And obviously you're one person and you don't speak for everyone, but from here, what we're hearing, what would you encourage us? Okay. What's a step we can take within our circles?
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, you could listen to this podcast called Someday Is Here, which is not sin, but Someday Is Here. really, I mean, there are communities where there aren't very many Asians, but typically, I would say, first of all, is to educate and to take some time to listen and learn, you know, while you're folding laundry or going on a run or whatever, take the time to learn, especially if you don't have Asians in your vicinity. If you happen to have some Asians in your vicinity, I would say really practically just take the time to share a meal. And when you go, if it's reciprocated, which I hope it would be, and you go to their home, make sure you take your shoes off before you go into the house. That's standard Asian practice. You know, there's bring a little gift, you know. There are a lot of similarities, honestly, with Southern culture and Asian culture, too.
Okay.
It's really fascinating to me. We spent a summer in South Carolina, and I was blown away. I'm like, this is like kind of Asian, just a little passive aggressive and indirect and, but very, you know, very like trying to honor, you know, just, it's so funny. So on one hand, there's nothing new under the sun, but taking some time to learn some of these cultural things is really, really valuable. I would say too, if you have Asians who are introducing you to their food, as much as possible, try not to slam it or make gaggy noises or, you know, like, because it's so important and truly probably is a place that we're really proud of. Mm-hmm. So it may not be like, I don't necessarily want to eat that, but to still understand that this is really, I'm trying to present to you my favorite, my best, and to see it as such. So
that's so great. I've really enjoyed this conversation, Vivi, and I can't wait to listen to more of your podcast. And I hope everybody listening will get on over there. Again, it's called Someday Is Here. And you have a book that you mentioned that you had a book earlier, but will you tell us the name of that and maybe just a little bit something about that for anybody who wants to learn more from you?
Oh, absolutely. So my first book is about my cancer journey. So I'm a breast cancer survivor, and that first book was Warrior in Pink. But the most recent book I just released in 2019 is a book called Open Hands, Willing Heart, Discover the Joy of Saying Yes to God. And for me, this is the secret sauce of the Christian life, is that of surrender. And when we live surrendered with a heart posture of willingness and hands that are open, it really unleashes God's spirit to work in us and through us. And so the book actually touch on some of this about, you know, building bridges instead of walls. And I touch on, you know, the things that get in the way, whether it's our entitlement or apathy, busyness. And then I talk about what it looks like to live open-handed, which includes diversifying our friend groups and practical things like that, as well as understanding that we don't always live our plan A, and and on and on. So yeah, it's I would love for your listeners to check it out.
Yes. Well, thanks for your time and thanks for everything you shared with us.
Oh, well, thank you for inviting me.
I'd highly encourage you to check out Vivian's podcast. It's called Someday Is Here, which I've linked to in the show notes, as well as Vivian's books. Friends, thank you for listening to By Faith. Producing this podcast brings me so much joy, and I pray it encourages you each week. Next week, join me as I speak with Kristen Boslaw. Kristen is a widow and a single mom to young children. Kristen shares about the day that she lost her husband and how death altered her life in almost every way. She lets us step into the shoes of being a single parent and how God has provided for her, what the unseen challenges of being a single parent are, and how we can help and love the single moms and single dads around us. I look forward to sharing this conversation with you. And until then, have a great week and keep walking forward by faith.